This is Edwin O'Shea, and this is commentary for section 0.5 of the Calculus 1 textbook for Math 235. So the title of this section is Logic and Mathematical Thinking. Now this might be a surprise, but once we go through the whole calculus up to this point, and I think that mathematics is all about solving problems, but in fact, it's really more about, you know, even this term is kind of troubling, this term logic and mathematical thinking. But I would say mathematics as a whole is probably much closer to your experience of high school geometry than it would be to the calculus. Now, that's not to say that, you know, the calculus, as you know it so far, is not part of the mathematical experience. You know, it most certainly is, but it's a small part. One of the things that we will do in this class is that while we'll still be talking about the calculus and developing it very carefully, I do want us to kind of appreciate that, you know, the various things that we study have, first and foremost, are very beautiful, and that second, they have a kind of, you know, a logical foundation. As to, you know, so like, you know, when we say something is true or something isn't true, that's actually a statement that we can prove. Not just this, you know, not just a collection of cases that we can look at and say, oh yeah, you know, a certain property holds in these 10 cases, therefore it holds all the time. Let's look at the first page of the section. You'll see there's some definitions. The first part of the reading kind of distinguishes between definitions and theorems. So far, the only theorem we've come across is that idea of f has, you know, a function f has an inverse if and only if the function is 1-to-1. That's, there you have a function, you know, we've defined what it means for a function to have an inverse and for a function to be 1-to-1. And we're saying that these two things are in some sense equivalent. We can make further statements like this, and that's what this first section or this first part goes on to say. Kind of talks, it distinguishes between definitions and theorems. So theorems are things that can be logically, you know, using logic, they can be concluded from the different types of definitions. And most often than not, it establishes relationships between different types of definitions. So we have a few definitions here. Most of them are familiar. Maybe one that might be surprising is the last one here for a rational number. It says it's a real number that can be written as a fraction of two integers where the denominator is not equal to zero. Now you might wonder, well, aren't all real numbers rational? Well, something that, you know, if you ask me to show this in class, you know, I can show it, or we'll show it at some point later on. But numbers like the square root of 2 are not rational. And when I make that statement, I make it as if to say that this is something that we can actually prove. We can prove that no matter how hard you try, you cannot find two integers, p and q, such that p divided by q is exactly the square root of 2. It's a very powerful statement, very surprising as well. Next, we move on to quantifiers. Notice definition 28 talks about, you know, the for all quantifier and there exists quantifier. So read through that carefully. And then we also have implications. And, you know, implications are basically, you know, the rules of logic, right? Or it's kind of like something, an implication is like something that you can deduce logically. So we've definition 29 and 30. 29 is definition of implications. And 30 is the converse of an implication. The reverse direction to the original implication is the converse. And then the contrapositive is something that's equivalent. So the contrapositive is a little, you know, unusual at first. So let's suppose if we had a statement for the contrapositive that says, you know, let's think of a statement. Let our statement A be... I'm trying to think of a good example. Let statement A be the following. Statement A is if a person is a mother, and statement B is if a person is a woman. Now notice that if a person is a birth mother, then they must be a woman. Now, of course, you know, I'm defining the woman in the strict, you know, in the strict old-fashioned biological sense. I'm not trying to make any statement there. But, you know, birth mother, if you were a birth mother, it implies you are a woman. Now, the contrapositive of that statement, not be, would be if you are not a woman. It implies then that you cannot be a mother. And those two things are equivalent. So sometimes you might want to prove A implies B, it might be much easier to show that not B implies not A. And that's what the first sentence after definition 31 says. It says the contrapositive of an implication is always logically equivalent to the original implication. And then there's more examples here that follow. The notion of a counterexample then is next. Read that very carefully. Counterexamples to implications, read that carefully. And then next we have some nice simple proofs. And that concludes the reading, I suppose, until we're coming to the examples and explorations. Read those carefully. Example 2 talks about finding counterexamples to false implications. If you want to show that something, you know, that a statement doesn't hold, it's enough just to find one counterexample. Remember that. And next we have, in example 3, we have a proof of an algebraic identity. That one's a very classical result. Example 4 is a direct proof saying that if you have two rational numbers and their sum is a rational number. Notice that the proof effectively says that, look, you just form a common denominator from the denominators of the two rational numbers in question. Example 5 is beautiful, proof by contradiction. Very powerful idea. We could talk a little bit more about that in class. Although, let me say a tiny bit about proof by contradiction right now. Let's suppose if you wanted to prove the statement, if you're driving, then you must be sober. I'll repeat that statement. If you are driving, then you must be sober. Now, if you were to make that argument to somebody out in the street, I bet that you would start by saying, well, suppose you were driving and you were not sober. In other words, suppose you were driving and you were drunk. Then you would logically conclude that this would significantly endanger another person's life. So you say that, you know, as a consequence, driving and not being sober is something that's not allowed. Consequently, one must be sober. So a proof by contradiction looks very strange at first, but remember, if you think about the argument for drunk driving, this is an argument that you make all the time. Okay? And then finally, we have the exercises. I'm just going to jump, right? You know, the exercises are mostly self-explanatory. I'm going to jump to example 69, just because it's such a pleasure to think about, right? So you have an island, you have two types of people, truth tellers and liars. Truth tellers always tell the truth, liars always lie. So look at 69. Liz is saying, we all tell the truth. Now, if Liz is a truth teller, then that means Liz, Rain and Zubin are all telling the truth. Or else, if Liz is a liar, then at least one person, Liz, possibly others, is a liar. So Liz says we all tell the truth. Rand says exactly two of us tell the truth. Now note that Liz and Rand's statements are contradictory. Unless one of them is a truth teller and the other one is a teller of lies. Both of those statements can't hold. And then Zubin says, finally, Liz and Rain always lie. Liz and Rain always lie. So what you have to decide is whether Liz, so if Liz is a truth teller or a liar, if Rain is a truth teller or a liar, and separately if Zubin is a truth teller and a liar, just from that information. So enjoy thinking about that. It's very satisfying. Okay, I'll sign off from here. and I'll go on to record something for section 1-1.